and welcome to the Super High Yield Anesthesia Podcast, the second edition. This is your host, Scott, the anesthesia resident.
Welcome back to the Super High Yield Anesthesia Podcast. This is Scott, the anesthesia resident. And today we're going to continue our acute pain series. Today is going to be an episode on neurochemistry of somatosensory and pain processing. So this one also, like the previous episode, might be a pain. It's a very nitty-gritty detail kind of facts, but I am hoping I can keep it to simple enough that you'll understand and you'll be able to use it for board purposes as well. Okay, so before I begin, I forgot to do the shout out last time, but in the last episode, but if you're listening, Dr. Jacob King, he's currently an intern at Mayo Clinic in Florida. He reached out to me to do a collaboration using my show notes in previous episodes and whatnot and for use in the anesthesia deck. For those of you guys who have not heard of this Anki deck, it's basically a collaborative effort amongst multiple people, one of which is Dr. Jacob King, basically using resources like Morgan McHale and whatnot to develop anesthesia and Anki cards. If you listen to our previous episodes about the residency life, we talked about Anki cards in the past, and this is one of our primary study materials or study methods. So if you are like a CA1 or an intern or just a med student, if you really want to use Anki cards and you're studying for anesthesia, definitely check out Ankisthesia. And again, thank you, Dr. Jacob King, for reaching out to me. Okay, that said, we're going to give you an outline of today's episode. First off, we're going to talk about inflammatory soup. So all like the cytokines and all that nasty stuff that we try to memorize for boards, but automatically forget if you're like me. I'll try not to make it too painful. And then we'll kind of talk about the different neurochemistry of pain transmission. So we're going to talk about excitatory neurotransmitters, the different type of receptors. So things like NMDA versus non-NMDA receptors. We'll talk about inhibitory neurotransmitters and stuff too. Then from there, we'll talk about signal propagation and second messenger systems. So things like sodium channels, potassium channels, calcium channels, chloride channels, things that are important in signal transduction and neuron, like action potentials, all that stuff. It'll be a good review. And those happens to be good targets for pain medications as well. Okay, so with all that said, let's go ahead and get started. Okay, so the first part of this episode is going to be the neurochemistry of pain transduction. And kind of before we get lost in the forest here, we're going to take a step back and take a look at the forest as a whole. So we're going to take the big picture, the big idea of this section I want you to know is that one, there's interrelated factors that contribute to pain. If you take a look at the diagram in the show notes / the Essentials of Pain book by Benson in chapter 2, there's a lot of stuff going on. So know that there's a lot of factors that contribute to pain. There's different receptors, there's different like inflammatory things, and each of these things becomes a target for analgesics. So you block something, you relieve pain. That's one big idea. The other big idea is there's peripheral things, different mediators like bradykinin and cytokines that increases nociceptive transmission to the spinal cord. So for example, if a patient's post-surgery, they're going to have inflammatory response to the surgery, and they're going to have increased pain from these inflammatory markers increases the transmission to the spinal cord. Okay, and lastly, regarding the spinal cord itself, the similar elements that generates acute pain over time becomes chronic pain. And this is generally caused by gene regulation, receptor expression, and glial activation and central sensitization. So again, big ideas. There's a lot of stuff that contributes to pain. So keep that in mind, and these becomes targets for analgesics, which we'll talk about in the future episodes. Okay. That being said, let's go ahead and talk about inflammatory soup. Now that I'm kind of looking at my show notes here, there's a lot of stuff going on. And it's pretty much what you remember from studying the inflammatory cascade kind of thing back in school. It's awful. It's very bad. But I'll try to make it less bad. Okay, so first of all, I'm just going to list out the different stuff that I plan to talk to you about, particularly in this episode. So bradykinin, low pH, so acidotic states, serotonin, histamine, eicoconazoids, nitric oxide, adenosine, different cytokines, excitatory amino acid, or EAA, nerve growth factor, NGF, proteinases, and matrix metalloproteinases. Okay, so those are the ones that we're going to talk about. So first one is going to be bradykinin. The mechanism behind bradykinin is 2G protein coupled receptors, so B1 and B2, following tissue injury. And this causes acute pain by activation of unmyelinated and myelinated nociceptors. And bradykinin is implicated in producing transient heat hyperalgesia. So sensitization of nociceptors through activation of phospholipase C, protein kinase C, production of eicoconazoids, and nitric oxide. So basically, bradykinin is one of the starters of the cascade that causes more pain down the line. Okay, so bradykinin, 2G coupled, G protein coupled receptors, activates unmyelinated and myelinated nociceptors. Okay, low pH. Low pH in the site of tissue injury causes activation and sensitization of nociceptors to mechanical stimuli via dorsal root ganglia neuron-specific acid-sensing ion channels. That is a mouthful. But the interesting thing is the excitation of these nociceptors does not undergo tachyphylaxis in a low pH state. And this could be synergistic with the different inflammatory mediators. So that's low pH. Next is serotonin. This is released directly from the platelets following tissue injury, and it's caused by platelet activating factor from mast cell degranulation, and the serotonin directly acts on the nociceptors itself, surprisingly. And it also enhances bradykinin-induced pain. So it's a synergistic effect with bradykinin. So that's serotonin. Next is histamine. As you probably already know, histamine is released by mast cells. And this is generally triggered by substance P and calcitonin gene-related peptide. This is going to be important a little bit later when we talk about substance P. But histamine, as seen before, it causes vasodilation and eventually it causes edema. Histamine also excites polymodal visceral nociceptors. It increases nociceptor response to bradykinin and heat. And specific histamine receptors, H3 and H4, they're G protein coupled receptors and they're implicated in different pain pathways in different tissues. So these things that we kind of talked about so far, a lot of it has to do with bradykinin. So the inflammatory soup, it's released and then it kind of has like a feedback loop, increasing the action of bradykinin. So that's a very, very important thing, so far in our discussion. Okay. Next, eicoconazoids. So they are basically the arachidonic acid metabolites, all the stuff that you learned already in school. Hopefully this one is not as bad as the cytokines and whatnot. But the main things, the different types of arachidonic acid metabolites are going to be prostaglandins, thromboxane, and leukotrienes. So first of all, for prostaglandins, they're synthesized by cyclooxygenase 1, or COX-1, and cyclooxygenase 2, or COX-2. And they reduce the activation threshold for sodium currents and nociceptors. So basically, it increases the frequency of action potentials because it's easier, because the threshold is lower to activate action potential. The prostaglandins increase intracellular cyclic AMP or CAMP levels. And lastly, prostaglandins increase excitability of sensory neurons. So basically, it makes the pain receptors easily excitable. So then it causes pain. As you already know from school, one thing, COX-1 and COX-2 are inhibited by NSAIDs. But again, we will talk about that when we cross that bridge. Okay, thromboxane, we're not going to talk too much about. But lastly, leukotrienes, they're released by macrophages and mast cells. And these ones contribute to hyperalgesia and sensitization to mechanical stimuli. Okay, so that's eicosanoids. Next is nitric oxide. And these ones are released by damaged afferent nerves, and they act on soluble guanyl cyclase, so SGC. And these augment pain inflammation by sensitizing nearby neurons. So basically, if one neuron is damaged, it releases this, and it makes the other surrounding neighbors feel pain too. So it's like a misery loves company kind of situation for nitric oxide. Next, adenosine. There's an increase in extracellular space with tissue injury and inflammation. The adenosine actually has, interestingly enough, the direct activation of nociceptors. And ATP activates C nociceptor fibers, and it does not sensitize C fibers to mechanical and heat stimuli. Okay, so that's adenosine and other derivatives of AMP, ADP, and ATP. Next, cytokines. Obviously, there's a bunch of them that we totally remember on the top of our head. But the ones that we're going to be kind of talking about the most are IL-1B, TNF-alpha, and IL-6. So first of all, cytokines come from a variety of cells. So macrophages, microglia, astrocytes, Schwann cells. And the main thing, as you know, they are pro-inflammatory, and they are very much associated with different pain syndromes. So for example, IL-1B and TNF-alpha, they directly excite and sensitize nociceptive afferent fibers to thermal and mechanical stimuli. So for example, you'll see increased TNF-alpha levels in synovial fluid of painful joints in conditions like rheumatoid arthritis. And then having antibodies against TNF-alpha improves the pain. So that's why you have the I will get to that when I get there. But DMARDs, there you go. But yes, so that's why IL-1B and TNF-alpha are important in these pain syndromes. And lastly, IL-6, which sensitizes nociceptors to heat. Okay, so IL-1B, TNF-alpha, and IL-6. An example that kind of ties it all together are Schwann cells. So Schwann cells, in terms of response to tissue damage, will express receptors for certain cytokines, so TNF-alpha, interferons, IL-1 and IL-6. And activation of these receptors actually causes the cascade that downregulates myelin synthesis. It increases expression of NGF receptors, dedifferentiation, and proliferation. Schwann cells then release cytokines that affect neighboring Schwann cells and exacerbates and sustains pain. So long story short, when there is tissue damage, the cells like Schwann cells, they release a bunch of cytokines, and it causes a cascade that increases the possibility of, or sensitizes them to nociceptive stimuli, and then it kind of spreads that amongst other Schwann cells as well, amongst its neighbors. So then the neighbors get irritated, and then they get more sensitive to pain as well, and then the process keeps going and going. And as you can imagine, this is how the inflammation causes pain, right? It just keeps spreading. It's like misery loves company. It just keeps going, right? Okay, so hopefully that wasn't too bad. But again, you know, keep the big idea in mind. So in times of tissue damage, it releases cytokines and just causes cascade that makes receptors more sensitive to depolarization and pain, basically more sensitive to nociception. Okay, so that's the big idea. And then we'll kind of throw in these random letters as we go along. Okay, so next thing we're going to talk about is excitatory amino acid, or EAA. Things like glutamate and aspartate, these are, as the name suggests, excitatory compounds that increases the excitatory modulation along the spinal cord. Glutamate itself binds ion channels and the G protein coupled receptors. Okay, and we'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit later. Next, as we kind of mentioned earlier, the nerve growth factor, NGF, this stimulates mast cells to release histamine and serotonin, and this sensitizes primary afferent fibers. Again, we're seeing this kind of trend, right? So we have release of one chemical, this case, nerve growth factor, it stimulates mast cells to release histamine and serotonin, which we kind of discussed before. And again, the final end product is sensitization of nerves to nociceptive pain. And moving on. So next, proteinases. This one I haven't seen come up on boards very often, so I kind of just gloss through this a little bit. So different proteinases, thrombin, trypsin, and tryptase, they act on proteinase activated receptors, or PARs, or PARs. And there's four classes of PARs. PAR 1 and PAR 2 are the most important ones to keep in mind, because they are implicated in pain and inflammation. They are particularly located in the periphery on nerve endings. When you activate PAR 1, this is done through via thrombin, and it releases histamine, substance P, and other cytokines. Activation of PAR 2 via trypsin and tryptase also activates an inflammatory cascade, particularly via bradykinin and prostaglandin release. And again, it sensitizes unmyelinated primary afferent nerves. So both of these together increases sensitivity to both mechanical and thermal stimuli. Okay, and the last inflammatory soup thingy that we're going to talk about is matrix metalloproteinases, or MMPs. The main thing we're going to talk about is endopeptidases. So this one's MMP2 and MMP9, and this is possibly related to diabetic neuropathy. These are macrophage chemoattractants, which converts the TNF-alpha into its active form. And as we discussed earlier, TNF-alpha could directly excite and sensitize nociceptive afferent fibers. So basically, in terms of when there's tissue damage, you have a bunch of white blood cells come to the scene. Macrophages are attracted to these MMPs, and once they're there, it kind of releases everything. So yeah, so that's the big picture idea. Okay, the next section we're going to talk about is peripheral anti-hyperalgesic mechanisms. So the main things that we're going to talk about are opioid receptors, acetylcholine, and gamma aminobutyric acid, or GABA. Oh gosh. And these ones kind of help counterbalance the pain signals from the other stuff that we talked about earlier. So opioids, as you know, are located on the peripheral nerve terminals, or opioid receptors are located on the peripheral nerve terminals of the afferent fibers. then they are usually upregulated actually during inflammation. Inflammatory cells could also help increase the release of endogenous opioids. And these opioid receptors are also activated by endothelin 1, so ET1, which is a vasoactive peptide created during tissue injury. ET1 then activates ETB receptors, which release beta endorphins that act on mu and kappa opioid receptors. And then this is linked to G-protein coupled inward rectifying potassium channels, or GERCs. So basically, not only does the inflammatory cascade cause a lot of badness, but also gives you some feel-good stuff too. So upregulates opioids and endogenous opioids like endorphins and whatnot. Okay, so that's opioid receptors. Next is acetylcholine receptors, and they release to injured tissue from non-neuronal sources. So acetylcholine is not the receptors. The muscarinic agonism desensitizes C-nociceptors to mechanical and heat stimuli. And lastly, gamma-aminobutyric acid, or GABA. GABA-A receptors are located on unmyelinated primary afferents, and activation of GABA-A receptors with the agonist mucimol decreases pain at lower doses and increases pain at higher doses. And GABA receptors are also found in the dorsal root ganglion. GABA antagonists decrease hypersensitivity in animal models for neuropathic pain. Other things to note, there are honorable mentions for peripheral anti-hyperalgesic mechanisms, or somatostatin, and angiotensin II. Okay, so that is our overview of neurochemistry pain transduction. Now we're going to move on to neurochemistry of pain transmission. And in this one, we're going to talk about the excitatory neurotransmitters, the inhibitory neurotransmitters, different neuropeptides, and lastly, we're going to talk about the different ion channels that are related to pain. Okay, so the first one, excitatory neurotransmitters. As we kind of alluded to earlier, the main excitatory neurotransmitters that we're going to talk about are glutamate and aspartate. And these ones, they actually act on four different types of receptors. And they're kind of grouped into two main categories. So the NMDA receptors and non-NMDA receptors. And the non-NMDA receptors are the kinate and AMPA receptors, and the metabotropic receptors. And we'll kind of get there shortly. But to first start off, we'll talk about NMDA receptors. So NMDA receptors are only recruited by intense and prolonged somatosensory stimuli. Basically, the presynaptic neuron was going to release a bunch of glutamate repeatedly. So then all these action potentials are causing the increased release, sustained release of glutamate. And as it binds to the NMDA receptor, and first it has to kick off the magnesium, so it displaces magnesium molecule, and then once it binds to the NMDA receptor, it causes depolarization of the postsynaptic neuron, allowing sodium and calcium to enter. So that's one of the reasons why magnesium is used as one of the pain medications, but we'll kind of get there when we talk about that. Okay, so again, the NMDA receptors, if it's persistently activated, it causes sensitization of the dorsal horn neurons. This increases in receptive field size, it decreases activation threshold, and it prolongs the depolarization after the activation of the NMDA receptor. Okay, so that's NMDA, and again, our honorable mentions regarding this is ketamine, which is an NMDA receptor antagonist, as well as magnesium, which needs to be displaced before glutamate can actually bind onto the NMDA receptor. So that's why we can use these synergistically for perioperative pain management. But again, that's something we'll talk about in a later episode. Okay, that's next. We're going to talk about the non-NMDA receptors. And this one's not as high yield as the NMDA itself. but we'll talk about it for completeness sake. So first of this group of receptors is the kinate and AMPA receptors. They're basically sodium channels and they mediate a majority of fast synaptic afferent signaling for all modalities and intensities stimuli. And lastly is metabotropic receptors. These are our G protein link sites. They are associated with long-term cellular changes. And there are three groups of metabotropic receptors. Group one leads to activation receptor, or group one activates PLC, liberating inositol phosphate, which then releases cytosolic calcium and activates PKC. If that didn't make sense to you, it didn't make sense to me either. Basically, to overall big picture, is activation of group 1 metabotropic receptors eventually leads to cellular excitability and signaling. Oh, it's okay. In groups 2 and 3, they are negatively coupled to adenyl cyclase, so reduces intracellular CAMP and PKA activity, and these often have inhibitory effects on transmission. So again, for excitatory neurotransmitters, we have glutamate and aspartate, and they act on NMDA receptors and non-NMDA receptors. And the last excitatory neurotransmitter that we're going to talk about is ATP, adenosine triphosphate, and this modulates the somatosensory transmission. And the primary receptor for this is going to be P2X. This thingy has 7 subunits, and it's on central terminals at primary afferent fibers innervating neurons in lamina 5s and 2 of the dorsal horn, and this also increases the release of glutamate. All right, so I was originally going to go through all of these in one episode, but you know, we're at the halfway point, and it's already about half an hour. So I decided that I'm just going to split this episode into 2 parts. So basically, in the next episode, we're going to continue our conversation and talk about inhibitory neurotransmitters, neuropeptides, and lastly, we're going to talk about the sodium or the ion channels and second messenger systems as pertaining to transmission of pain. So, with that said, my fun fact for you for this episode, give me a second here, also from cracked.com, and it's related to octopi? Yeah, anyways, so each arm of an octopus has its own brain. Octopuses have more nerve cells in their arms than in their heads. Each arm can move, touch, and taste by itself with no input from the central brain. So that's kind of weird. They're definitely delicious, though. One of my favorite foods is actually takoyaki. So if you haven't had takoyaki before, it's like this dough ball. It's like a Japanese street food thing. It's a dough ball with like scallions and octopus inside the ball. And then you just, yeah, it's delicious. You should try it. Okay, so that's it for me on this episode. Again, the main source for this episode and the show notes is from Benzin's Essentials of Pain Medicine 2017. It's the 4th edition, and this one specifically Chapter 2. So if you are so kind enough, I would appreciate it if you leave a rating and a comment and on this podcast. Again, I don't get paid for this. I just do it. It just makes me feel better about myself, and it gives me more motivation to keep going. Because right now, I do this as a labor of love. So hopefully, if at least one of you guys learned something or is like useful enough that you got a question right on boards or something, that makes me happy. Okay, so yeah. Closing, or I should probably do an actual closing credit thing, but intro music by Brian Teal, and the script and everything, research production, whatever, is by me. Okay, I don't know. Just trying to mimic the other podcasts I listen to. All right, guys, thank you very much for listening. I am glad that you are joining me on this journey. So, stay tuned. Sorry about that. Stay tuned for the next episode. This is Scott, the anesthesia resident, and I'm looking forward to see you in the next one.